You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. We're coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. Today is January 27th, 2023. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe. Bhavin, let's dive into it. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It snowed a couple of times since we last spoke.
So I had to shovel.
Yeah. But I had to shovel. So I don't know. It wasn't as bad. Like, it wasn't a big storm. So at least in Arlington,
this is like the most mild Boston winter I've ever been.
Oh yeah, for sure. I couldn't be happier, you know. Like, I was contemplating in November or October, should I buy a snowblower or should I not?
Yeah, and then good
I
thing like, you didn't.
Yeah. Like, that would have been just sitting in the garage.
You know what? Now it'll like dump 2 feet of snow several times in March or something weird for you. Don't worry.
Okay.
Mother Nature has her ways to get back at us Bostonian New Englanders. So Anyway, what else have you been up to?
No, I'm just excited with the football season. Like, I know we're coming to an end. Last week was divisionals. This week is conference championships. Those games have been awesome. That's my weekend plans.
I forgot to watch any of it. So, it started already?
No, you should like really watch the games this weekend. Like, some good games this weekend. So, but yeah, enough about me. Talk about your noodle tour. Like, what was going on there?
Noodle tour. Yes. Well, as you know, a few weeks ago, I won't say which day, but I celebrated a birthday. I'm, you know, 1 year older.
Yeah. Very specific.
And I, you know, like we do on our conferences, you, Tim, and I, and whoever we can drag along, go to a good noodle spot in whatever city the conference is in. It's always a lot of fun. If you don't do that, I recommend it, especially if you like noodles. Check it out. Ask us for a list if you'd like some. We'll give you our list. But for my birthday, I picked a few spots in Worcester, Massachusetts, that I have not been to and that have been on my list. One was a really good Vietnamese place called Saigon House. And another one was Chasu.
Okay.
Or Japanese. And I envisioned that I could eat more than just two places, but after I got done with the second place, I was like, nope, definitely couldn't have done more than two places. And I ate modestly at both because I wanted to be able to eat both. Although the sake at the second place was very good. You got to pick your own cup and everything. It was delicious.
Nice. So, that sounds like a birthday well spent.
Okay. Yeah. One of the better ones. Can't complain. Anyway, so have any fun plans, or we want to dive into the news?
Yeah, let's do news. My plans for the weekend is just watching NFL football, so
yeah, I'd say that's pretty good. And cool. Well, why don't you start us off, Bhavin?
Yeah, so a few things, right? We have a couple of articles that I wanted to talk about and three different acquisition news. So let's start with the articles, right? One of the things that came across was WeWorks donated their third project to CNCF now. The project is called Cured with a K. And this is the third after they donated Cortex and Flux already. Yes. Cured was originally, I think, started back in 2017. But like, it's not a fancy tool, but it's more of like a reboot daemon, right? That performs safe automatic node reboot. So what it does is it continuously checks for the reboot sentinel file in /where run reboot required. And if that exists, it works with the API server, locks it in so that only one node of your cluster reboots at a time. It also cordons and drains worker nodes before the reboot and uncordons them after. So like, it makes it a safe reboot instead of just pulling the plug and restarting the node and maybe losing some data or your applications going down. So that was a good tool that's available and now part of the CNCF ecosystem.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then the second link, I found it really helpful and very relevant to the topic today. Top 15 kubectl plugins for security engineers. Again, they are good tools. I won't list all 15, but a few that caught my eyes were like Stern. So Stern basically is a plugin that will help you do tail-f. So if you do a kubectl Stern app name, it basically like gives you the logs of that app, or which basically matches the name of your pod. So that's a cool tool. Policy Advisor, it suggests you pod security policies and OPA policies for your Kubernetes cluster. So once you run that, it will identify things where you need to have policies in place and help you apply those. Kube Login, I didn't know this was a need, but this looks cool. It allows you to authenticate again for your CLI sessions using your OIDC provider. So like if you have an OIDC provider from CLI, you don't really have that integration. So if you install this plugin and if you run it for the first time, it will open up a browser session where you can log in, and then it authenticates your CLI session as well. So that was a cool tool.
Yeah.
And then a final one that, like, out of the 15 that I wanted to talk about was Ksniff. It's for capturing and analyzing network traffic. So I know we have used Wireshark in the past a lot. So this, I think, gives a similar flavor of tool for your Kubernetes cluster. So read through the list. We'll have the link in the show notes. Some cool looking plugins for kubectl.
Wireshark, TCP dump, basically into kubectl. Love it.
Yep. And then talking about acquisitions, right? I'll start with the couple of ones that I want to talk about, and then I'll hand it off to you. The first one being Mirantis acquired a startup called Shippa. So Shippa used to be in the cloud native delivery and application delivery ecosystem. So now they had raised around $3.75 million of seed funding in 2020. And the acquisition amount, again, wasn't disclosed as at an exact amount, but it is assumed to be in between $10 million and $30 million. So I would say, like, pretty good return. And I think from reading a couple of articles, Mirantis is planning on integrating Shippa with its Lens platform to accelerate the cloud-native application delivery pipelines, and also integrate it with their Mirantis Kubernetes engine service that they have. So a good exit for Shippa, and some good cool technology for Mirantis to integrate into its own products. The second one that I had for today was a startup, again, not a big company, but a cloud-native startup called Harness, acquiring another cloud-native startup called Propello. So this Propello had was a smaller startup that had raised, I think, $16 million across their angel seed and series A round. So it was not a big thing. I think the number of employees, if I looked up, was like 51 or 53. So not a big company, but it adds a capability to the Harness software and Harness platform as the eighth module. They like to call it the Harness Software Engineering Insight module. But it basically helps organizations, one of the customers listed on their website being Broadcom, to make their developers more efficient, right? So obviously with 2023, the way things are, we obviously want to make sure all of our resources are more productive. So this, I think, basically fits into Harness's ecosystem really well and helps them go or move up from, I think they were a $3.7 billion valuation company to even higher now in the future. Right. But yeah, that's a quick list from me.
Yeah, absolutely. One to add to the list, right, is Cloudify is acquired by Dell. So basically, if you're familiar with Cloudify, the you know, infrastructure as code, automation, those kind of things, it makes a lot of sense for Dell. I mean, I work there. I won't say what I know, but, you know, what Dell's doing, and especially in sort of their Apex and cloud journey for their customers. I think it's a great acquisition. We'll know more where it surfaces over time, obviously, and the amount was around 100 million.
Yeah,
I don't know the exact the number publicly, and yeah, really exciting stuff over there. Another Israeli company, actually, the Dell and EMC, I feel like they do a lot of acquisitions from that market, to be honest. And then the only other one I had here for my news is the Colo events were officially announced for KubeCon EU. So if you're not familiar with what the Colo events are, if you're going to KubeCon EU, these are events that typically take place a day or two before the official KubeCon conference, and focus more into specific communities, right? Whether it's CICD or security, WASM, Edge, all those things. There's usually a specific day for the thing you're interested in. And I highly recommend, if you can get there early to attend one of these, the organizers, often, you know, it's a closer knit type of community. The day is very well spent kind of diving into the different technologies. If you're a technologist or just there to kind of consume and learn, definitely go check these out. There's usually more that get added that aren't officially part of the CNCF.
Yeah.
Companies and vendors add some as well. I don't think all those are announced yet, but these are from the CNCF. Mm-hmm. So go check it out. We'll put the link in the show notes.
And usually they have so many Day Zero events running simultaneously. So like you have to actually pick and choose like, okay, what am I most interested in? But I don't want to lose out on the other thing.
Yeah.
But don't worry. Like even if you attend your most interesting thing, everything else gets posted on YouTube. Like I know for the Service Mesh episode that we did, Ryan, I basically went and like watched 75% of the sessions that were part of the Day Zero Service Mesh Con event at KubeCon Detroit. So like content will be available. So they don't have a FOMO around it, but it is really valuable to attend in person if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And we were part of DOK Day, which was a Day Zero one. And the entire 9 hour, 10 hour day was on YouTube. All in one video. that was an interesting way. But you can always go back and just literally go through and have another day within your day if you want to.
Yep.
Our guest today is Christoph Hartmann, CTO and co-founder of Mondu. He's here to talk about all things Kubernetes and security posture management. So without further ado, let's get him on the show. Well, Christoph, welcome to the show. Welcome to Kubernetes Bytes. I know it's been quite a time coming to get you on the show. Why don't you introduce yourself and let everyone know what you're up to?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Robin, for having me at this podcast. Super excited. I'm Chris, co-founder and CTO at Mondu. And my key mission is to make the world a little bit more secure and giving people the tooling to essentially make this happen. My career really started, I think it's nearly a decade ago, at Deutsche Telekom, which is parent of T-Mobile. And back in the days, we really started in how do we build out cloud infrastructure with OpenStack back in the days. Like this was a thing. And it really drove the old security models over the corner because it really hasn't worked, right? And so the question was like, how do you secure such a critical infrastructure like telecommunication in a really highly ephemeral world? And it was really, really early. And what we've built, Dominic, the other co-founder at Mondu, like we together worked there and we built out a project called DevSecIO. And that was the first server hardening framework built all around Chef, Puppet, and Ansible. Mm-hmm. Back in the days, people still like use those things to secure secure infrastructure. And it's really important to figure out like how can security be rolled out automatically. And we had a huge learning with that. And that learning was that it's not really about like fixing the problem. It's really helping people understand what the problem is in the first place. And then automation plays a key role to do this continuously. But it's all about like giving the knowledge to people so that they know what to do and they can make better decisions. And based on that experience, Dominic and I started a company called VolcanoSec. And VolcanoSec built a very popular open source tool, InSpec, which was the first policy as code engine that we made really, really successful. Chef Software acquired our company, and we made this essentially like the biggest part of Chef to get deals. Like because like a large enterprises used it, Fortune 500. If you look it up in the internet, like MITRE, the research organization of the U.S. government, used it. Mm-hmm. NSA used it. So it's essentially, we have seen a lot of compliance requirements in the world, like used by large corporations, but also governments, and how they actually want to go in this fully automated path. Mm-hmm. And that really led to the point where we really learned quick how to do automation for security. But as time flies by, Dom and I left essentially Chef, because it was not missing some of the newer tech like Kubernetes. We always believed in Kubernetes is a thing and we should like build a security product around that. And so, that was essentially the cornerstone for starting Mondu, like really building a security product around automation, around security, but built for platform engineers and security engineers.
Okay. Gotcha. And that's awesome, right? I think helping organizations build these secure environments or like, I want to ask my next question. Improve their security posture is a really great thing to do for the community, right? So I know Ryan and I did a Kubernetes Security 101 podcast. It's one of our, I think, top three episodes at this point.
Nice.
It is. So, and that was just you and me, right? As we spoke about in that podcast, it was a mile wide and just an inch deep, maybe. So that's why we are like, okay, let's get Chris on the pod and let's start talking about and going into some details around Kubernetes security. So let's start, right, Chris? Let's start by talking about what is Kubernetes Security Posture Management, or KSPM for short. I know people have been familiar with CSPM and Cloud Security Posture Management. How have things evolved and what does this mean for organizations?
Yeah, so first of all, like, I think we should like talk a little bit about security posture management in general, and then like deep dive into Kubernetes specifics. So security posture management essentially really helps you identifying like what is the risk in your infrastructure. And if you want to break it down, it is essentially like two things. It's where are your biggest vulnerabilities? So essentially, is everything patched? And the other problem is, like, is everything configured properly? So finding misconfigurations. So this is like the short version of what it is. Of course, like, there are nuances, but I think this is security posture management. And if we apply this to Kubernetes, it quickly becomes complicated, because in Kubernetes land, Kubernetes is a really amazing technology to horizontally scale your infrastructure. And that naturally involves a lot of different layers of technology that to make that happen. And if we just look at the most frequently used cloud providers, and it's like Amazon has EKS, and it's also like the most frequently used like Kubernetes environment, the same continues with then like GKE and AKS, right? And so now you're not having like a Kubernetes security posture management for the cluster only, you also have it for the cloud. It really starts with the cloud account, then goes to the cluster. And even though in Kubernetes, like, you luckily don't have to deal with the mass, like the management node.
Sure, yeah, that's true.
But you still, the nodes need to be taken care of. And like, we see some really good improvements where cloud providers like go to really container OS, or AWS is using BottleRock, hopefully more and more forward. So to secure those nodes, and then it comes to cluster misconfigurations, workloads, but also applications. And the challenging thing, like using it in clouds, is if you use IAM stuff, essentially, it can, if you misconfigure, it can happen that from your pod with a wrong mapped service account, you can break out Kubernetes completely and you have too much access to the cloud. So that's why it's so important to not just see security posture as an isolated piece, but really at the all technology layers that you essentially use. And that's really key for like when we talk with customers and users, because we want to explain them, hey, there are all those layers, you need to understand them. And then you can prioritize the issues properly.
Yeah, as great as Kubernetes is, right, to your point, it does add a whole nother level of complexity, right? No one, I don't think we've said to someone, you know, that it adds complexity and they've disagreed with that. I can imagine from the security standpoint, you know, that's all, like you said, a whole nother layer to on top of, you know, CS. Maybe it should be CKSPM.
Yeah. We call this like XSPM, like extensible security posture management, for the reason that essentially nowadays you can't really restrict this to any technology anymore. Like in a couple of years ago, it was really like you use a tool for X and a tool for Y. But what we believe in is that engineers should use the right technology for the right job they're trying to do, and that doesn't mean like you reduce it to a few like different tags. Like if serverless is great, like your serverless is container great. Sometimes you still want to have a VM with GPU attached directly. Oh, yeah. So there's always a good reason. And I think this is what we also need to acknowledge as the industry. Like there's not one right thing, like there are many. And we need to make sure that the tooling that we use in our ecosystem is essentially supporting users in a way that they can do their job, and it's not limiting them in their technology choice to do the work.
Yeah,
security tools are traditionally like doing a really bad job at it. Like we need to say this. Like they normally are perceived as the blocking piece of things. Like if you have platform engineers and you should like, we have done many like therapy sessions with them and really, that was always the biggest thing. Like security is like blocking me. It's like not helping me. I can't integrate this in my pipeline. Yep. It's like pain, pain, pain. And I think this is what the whole security industry needs to change.
Oh yeah. I mean, I imagine the amount of times a developer has run into a security thing and said, well, how do we disable it so I can get past it, right? You know, like, 100%. SE Linux is getting in your way? Disable it, right? You know, like, I know that happens quite a bit. And I, you know, to what you said before around automating, you know, security, I know that security has often come up as sort of a tertiary or secondary thing to functionality. And fundamentally, I think, as an industry, and the more we see all these, you know, cybersecurity issues in the industry or in the world, right? It has to become more prevalent, and it starts with, you know, from the get go, we need to think about this stuff, and the best way to do that is to take it out of people's hands and automate it. So, I'm all for that. You know, speaking of which, you know, people in general are, you know, are fallible. They make mistakes. They misconfigure 100%. Things. And that's fine. We're human. But so I'm curious what types of misconfigurations you come across to maybe in your day to day or with your customers or that, you know, you generally see as a community in this industry.
Yeah, very, very good question. I mean, just saying this up front, there are like more nuanced things, and I just like highlight the biggest issues here. Which are the biggest problems that we see with our users. In Kubernetes land, definitely biggest problem is like service accounts. Like service accounts mounted into pods where they shouldn't. They have default permissions. Like if you run workloads that don't need any access to Kubernetes API, like why? So that's definitely something that's an easy win, but it's also helping you to prevent accidental like pass through attacks. And so it's like simple check, but like still very, very often. Privileged containers are still like too often being used. Sometimes even security tools like force you to do that, and like I recommend you like
storage tools do too, and we're very familiar
storage tools too. So so essentially like you should always like try to avoid this as much as possible, like to the minimal amount. If you do that, you need to have double watch at those things, because like there could be a good reason for it, right? But like in most cases, for most workloads, you most likely don't need that, and it's really important to understand that, because once you have a privileged container, you can, and we do demos around this quite often, like you can have a malicious container, like it could be a standard container just with a vulnerability, you break out of it. We demonstrate this with the latest patch, like EKS. You break out of a container, come to the node and take over the whole node, and then also like take over the whole cloud, like the cloud account. So this is possible with like simple misconfiguration, but the good thing is Kubernetes has the right primitives to essentially secure that. Like it's not that the system is inherently insecure, it's more like it's wrongly configured, and the security features that are built in are just not enabled, and that's why this can happen. The next biggest issue is all about like IAM permissions, RBAC. Like this is too much permissions is like always a problem. You always want to go with least privilege. It's really hard to do it right.
You check the box, right?
Yeah, but it's really hard. Like, let's be real. Like, you need to test your application properly. You need to make sure that you cover all the use cases. What we recommend is like really build a fully automated application pipeline. Like frameworks like Salsa help you with guiding you through that. But essentially like help you to not do like click ops instead of like automated like Git ops. Yeah. And that helps you also to identify those things. You can fix things easier. You can test things easier. So I think there are many benefits in doing the automation. It helps you also with the authentication authorization issues.
So I'm assuming these are like common misconfigurations, they're also like low hanging fruits. Are there easy ways to like identify these in your infrastructure stack or in your applications, and then easy ways to fix this, or how do we go about it, right?
No, it's like totally easy. Like in Kubernetes, you have the security context. This is just manifest annotations essentially, mm-hmm. or make sure those annotations are not there, right? So that's why I'm saying like it's not that Kubernetes inherently is insecure that you should be worried about using Kubernetes. I think Kubernetes mm-hmm. has really, really good primitives. The problem is that the primitives are like deactivated or just not properly activated. And it's like this is what we call about misconfiguration. I don't believe mm-hmm. it's that the tools itself we use are insecure, and we see a lot of like things happen in the industry, like GVisor, Firecracker, like this gets more and more secure, but it needs to be enabled. It needs to be used. and that's the tricky point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I imagine IAM and RBAC, you mentioned before, have similar problems in the sense that, you know, a lot of times people will get an IAM policy that works, but not really understand or realize they're probably having too much permission than they actually need mm-hmm. to get the thing working, right? So I know I've been guilty of this myself, of like, you know, I check that box, I'm thinking about security, I've built an IAM policy and it's, and my application's happy, but really I just have too much going on. I could actually dial it back. And I think having the understanding of how do you find out where that sweet spot is, right? Mm-hmm. Is a challenge.
It's a challenge, and it also depends on the attack vectors. Like if you run your own application, you know what your own application is, you have a better understanding of what you need. But if you run like untrusted, like external code, then an arbitrary Git pipeline, like one example. Yeah. So then you need to make extra care, right? Like you need to make sure that those things that run it are really protected. Otherwise it's a supply chain attacks all over, but it's really, really easy to mostly protect those things, but it needs to be surfaced. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So I know we spoke about the managed control plane, right? Offerings. We spoke about EKS, AKS, GKE, where users don't get access to those control planes. So it's more of a shared security model, as AWS likes to call it, right? Where mm-hmm. you are only responsible for your worker nodes and your applications. But even with the shared security models, are there any other things that I can make that I can do to protect my cluster overall? Like, how do I make sure that I'm running my applications, assuming the applications mm-hmm. are really well built in a secure mm-hmm. environment? Like, are there like three things or something like that, right? Like an easy formula to make sure my base mm-hmm. cluster is all good to go.
So first of all, if you use managed Kubernetes, you need like to secure your cloud account. Like that's like the mm-hmm. base primitive. Like you don't think about this immediately because you think you run like Kubernetes. But it really starts with the cloud account, narrowing it down, narrowing IAM permissions, make sure like this, and preferably run like one cloud account per cluster if you can, if it mm-hmm. makes sense, just to isolate them properly. The two-factor authentication, like all the stuff that applies, like it's really the basics that come in, like permissions is definitely the biggest one. And then on Kubernetes level, I think it doesn't really matter like if you use it on-prem or in the cloud. The mm-hmm. master node is mostly protected, but like the nodes you still need to check, and the workload protection needs to be enabled as well. So coming back to misconfigurations we just talked about, like simple manifests. I think it's just to understand those layers: cloud account, then Kubernetes, and then application workloads. Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think let's shift towards the application a little bit more. You know, I know Bhavan and I, you know, covered a little bit of workload security last time we talked about this, and we talked about things like image scanning and patching. And but we'd love to hear your opinions on sort of best practices in terms of, you know, the actual workload that's running inside Kubernetes as well. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen some predictions and read some articles around like the year of the S-bomb and Kubernetes and things like that. So I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah, I think I'm not necessarily a fan of like those like fancy keywords. I really always try to talk with users about like, okay, like what's the biggest problem first, and then let's see mm-hmm. how we solve it technically. From my perspective, when we talk about like Kubernetes security, we can generally split this in like management plane, like where we have the cluster and the cloud account, which is one way of securing. And now we're focusing on the part that continuously deploy into Kubernetes via hopefully pipelines. And the first step to essentially secure your things is to know what you are running. So it sounds strange, but like essentially it's just knowing is half of the way. So you essentially need to know what kind of workloads you're running, what kind of containers are you running? Are you running self-built containers? Are you running external containers? How many vulnerabilities have my running things? How many misconfigurations do I have in my Kubernetes manifest? Like understanding this makes you much better, because then you can prioritize, you can hand off work, you can teach and train people, so that that helps you much. And the next level is then really using mostly industry best practice guidelines, CIS or NSA. They offer really good guidelines. They're sometimes overreaching, so still like it needs to be considered, like based on your requirement, because like a bank obviously have different standards than a startup, right? So understanding that like there's not like one way, but those levels normally go with, this is the one thing like you have to do. And I think it's like a little bit more nuanced, like they come with good guidances, and then like talk all those things through, and tools help you to guide you through the way.
I think my next question is around, as you said, right? Like you always have to make sure that whatever you're running is from a trusted source, is from the container image, for example, is properly signed. And I know the word provenance has gotten a lot of discussion. Like it has been the topic of discussion recently. And that's how we ended up with the Software Bill of Materials or SBOMs. But the new thing that I think I wanted to get your take on was SBOM attestation. Like, why is that required? I know we have the VEX standard. Like, how do all of those things fit in, right? Like, if I'm a company that's producing an application or pushing an application to production, or a vendor that's producing a product, how do I make sure that my users trust it, right? How does that attestation process work?
Yeah. First of all, we need to understand the different attack vectors. So we have attack vectors in our software when we build software. Like this is normally like use like software dependency checks, and you use like different tools to check vulnerabilities. Then you have the pipeline, and you can like make supply chain attacks. And then hopefully the software that you have defined in your Git like is being built in the pipeline. And then like we have the software in our deployed in our runtime, and then like things happen there as well. So when we think about, again, it's all about like vulnerabilities on software level, but also like package level. So runtime and build time. And then the next level is like, how do you make sure that the stuff you're running is actually the stuff you've been built from, right? So that's the biggest problem. So if you use tools like Cosign, for example, are really good like for image signing. They don't solve your vulnerability problem. They don't solve your misconfiguration problem. What they do though is they say like, hey, Ryan, like you've built this container. Like, why is this container wrong? So I can go to Ryan and say like, hey, Ryan, like something is off. Why is it off? Right. And we can discuss it. So it's not like it prevents man in the middle attacks. And you can, first of all, only prove that this is the thing like you've built there. So there are still like proof issues here, because like you essentially just signed the container, but like all the stuff that went into the container, like there's still part. That's why a Salsa framework is important to make the whole chain like provable. But attestation helps you. It helps you in preventing man in the middle attack, but you need to understand it's not preventing vulnerability attacks. It's not preventing misconfiguration attacks. It's just like proof of work, like who has done it.
And basically it's on the user, right? Do I trust Ryan? Like, can I use his image? And Ryan is shaking his head. So, okay, we can't trust Ryan, but maybe we can trust this. No, okay. Okay, so that makes sense. And Chris, you used the term Salsa a lot, right? I know that stands for supply chain levels of software artifacts. I know because it's written down in my notes. Like, what's that framework? Like, that's a new thing, right? That we have been hearing in the community. And how does it help improve the security posture?
Yeah, 100%. So let's assume like we have our Node.js app, and then we have a fully patched thing. Like all the JavaScript dependencies are 100% patched. Everything is green. So that means we are really good in our security level, and we want to rethink like whenever we deploy it into production, everything is green, right? The problem though is, what happens if the build pipeline is being attacked? So, and you're essentially during the build process, the attacker injects a new vulnerability or a new source code dependency. And this is the key problem. So if you have manual work, like you can't prove that the thing that you essentially have in your Git is really like used to being built. And so that's why you want to have a framework like Salsa that guides you through that process. And first, like, make sure you have a fully automated pipeline, step one, right? Like, so yeah. You go from nothing automated, like people, like developers just, oh, deploy this container from my workstation, boom, done. Prod, like we have done this many times, not at Mondo, but like I think we as like engineers, we have probably done it quite often in the past, mm-hmm. just to get our work done. But this is not a good approach. This is not good for companies who want to build up trust. Instead, mm-hmm. like you really want to have use Git pipelines to have everything automated. The whole build process is automated, and then in each step, you make sure that really the dependencies that you have in Git is being used. And so that helps you to essentially say, okay, this binary is being built from this source code. And then mm-hmm. you can guarantee, okay, like the green Git is actually also the green binary, right?
Right.
Or package. So, and that's why this framework is so important. It has source code integrity, but also build integrity. And that means the stuff that you're building and releasing out to people is the stuff that you're saying is in Git. And that's the important part. Because otherwise you have a disconnect between the green state in your Git and the packages you provide.
Yeah, I like the connection here with Git. Because I know, Bhavan, we've done a few episodes around concepts around GitOps, right?
Yep.
And it always comes up that, you know, GitOps helps an overall security posture. And so connecting it to this, I think, and it's clear on why those types of models and sort of pipelines help your security posture. I like that connection. And I don't know, what would you say? Is our trend towards things like GitOps helping your day-to-day, I guess, with customers as well?
We use like everything at Mondo is like fully automated build because it also makes reliable build process. You normally like have advantages like faster build processes. And it also, it doesn't solve the vulnerability part per se, but you have everything tracked in Git. So even if you have an attacker later on, like you can always prove, hey, this attacker like manipulated Git here, and then mm-hmm. it's in the Git history. So it's also coming back to proof of things what happened, right? So you can always have that, and then you, like the next level is you enforce essentially like peer review for approvals, like nobody can like push directly the mechanisms. You can then improve on the source code level to make this more difficult. And it's all about making things more difficult. Can you prevent all the different attacks? Probably not, but you can make it so that it's a lot of work and mm-hmm. attackers always take the easiest way to get in. So think about a house. You have a fully secured house, like all the like fancy like new alarm stuff, and then mm-hmm. you leave the door open, right? So like yeah. it doesn't help you. So that's and attackers like they don't like switch off their alarm if your door is open. So that's why it's so important to build essentially this secure understanding the security posture, know where you are, like on which level in pipeline and in production, and that really helps you to know where you need to navigate and where to need to like fix stuff first.
Yeah. Oh, that makes total sense, right? Like I think I was thinking about the same home analogy that you used. Another thing is like if a lion has to feed, like it has just to conquer the slowest hyena, right? Like you don't want to make sure, you have to make sure that your organization is not that slowest hyena, like you're not the most vulnerable. Because as you said, attackers will go for the slowest or the weakest target there.
Yeah, I like the, there was one that came up in my head about, you know, the GPUs and iPads that have been coming up like filled with cement, like the man in the middle attacks.
Yeah.
For some reason that came up in my head as well. Anyway, great analogies. But I think something you said that was key there is, you know, make it more difficult for the attacker, but at the same time, you're also trying to make it less difficult for a developer to use it,
mm-hmm.
you know, right? So, because right. if you make it yes. more difficult, but more difficult for a developer, they're not going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's yep. a challenge as well. And maybe something you're tackling already.
Okay. And then I think while doing some research for this episode, right, and I came up across a tool that you guys maintain called CNSpec and how that's available as an open source tool for organizations to consume. Can we talk about how what CNSpec is built for, like what challenges does it solve for, and then how can people use it?
Yeah. So CNSpec is our take on how to quickly assess your security posture. It's one of the, like, it essentially helps you to continuously monitor like and misconfiguration across all the clouds. It helps you to scan VMs, containers, Kubernetes workloads. It helps you to identify identity misconfigurations, and it's also built for shift left. And the way like to think about this is like it's extensible on multiple ways. Like we have providers, we have that allows us to do AWS, GCP, we have GitHub integration, we have operating system, container, and remote. So different providers, similar to how Terraform works. It's really the same thing. Like it works. It's think about like Terraform for security, and then we have a resource packs that allows us to write like resources on top of those providers, and then you can build policies on top. And this is like a highly customizable like framework. We call it like it's the only extensible security framework. Like where you can like you're not stuck into a specific technology, and that was really important for us. Like when we started Mondo, we wanted to build something that is holistically for users, like where they can essentially focus on the problem. And the problem is like, where's my biggest risk? My problem is not how does Docker work or how does container work or how does the container registry work. I just want to know like, where's my risk, right? And so abstracting that problem is actually hard. Like a lot of people like always told us, hey guys, like this is not going to work. Like you can't do that. We've proved them wrong because like
one of the best motivators right there, right?
Yes, yes. And I think we need giving users to say something like scan SSH, scan container image, scan AWS, and essentially runs policies with checks that are totally dynamic. All the checks that we ship, and we have open source policies available, and we have CS policies available, we have NSA policies available, so you can just like out of the box use those policies, run them, and see quickly where your security posture is. And it's really an open framework, like similar to Terraform, but for security. So it's really extensible. We encourage people to like contribute, tell us what's missing, because we really want to help users to solve the problem of, hey, where's my security posture, no matter like what kind of tech they're using. We have customers asking for AIX support, and we have customers asking like going in the different direction where they all use like it for IAM permissions, S3 buckets, and so on. Yeah. And that's all working. And so that makes it like super easy for teams to first start with an out-of-the-box policy, but then also go off and say, look, it's in my environment, there are specific requirements, so I want to customize it. And that's why they can write their own policies and override things. And that's the key. Like this is why it's also open source, because we believe this should be like a your own right to secure yourself. Like we want to make this available to everyone, and that's why we really open sourced it to make it available to everyone.
And I really like the breadth, right? Like it can scan everything from like a VMware host to a VMware virtual machine to like your Terraform plans to Kubernetes clusters through Docker registry. Like regardless of where you are on that modernization journey, like this can help you scan everything.
Yeah, and it includes vulnerabilities and misconfiguration. And what you said is really important. It's we believe organizations are not just in one tech. Like organizations are always transforming. And so they have something in VMware, and they have something in cloud, and they have something in containers, and something bare metal. And I think it's back to my original story. It's really not about like telling people this is all right or this is wrong. They normally know why they're doing it, and so we don't want to like judge it. We just say, look, we look at this, we help you get what's the risk there, and then you can make your decisions. So it's really built for humans to make better decisions.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier the idea of sort of mixed workloads, and I really think we're seeing a trend towards that anyway, and I see that as sort of a foreseeable future, right? These mixed VM container serverless workloads, and picking the right tool for the job is also very mm-hmm. much embedded in that thought process. So having security tools that also work like this, and I could see, you know, we're already seeing orchestration tools that kind of get into this, right? Let me do both. Let me do all three of those. So I think very important and a good lead in, I think, to our final question here is like, how do people get involved? Obviously, they can go and check out this project and see if it works for them and contribute. But is there other resources that you'd love to share? And or you mentioned a cool EKS demo where you broke out and controlled the cloud. Do you have that available? I know I'm interested in that, but anything you have, that'd be great.
Yeah, we can definitely share this. I can send it to you so you can like add this to the podcast. And then, we are always like, first, we want to like get more user feedback. Essentially, we want to have a really like useful tool available. So like we have open source policies, we have open source resources. So I think the easiest one is to look at the policies, make sure we do it. Double checking and triple checking for those things, but sometimes you miss things. So it's easy to contribute. If you have an application where you say this is not covered, you can contribute this to this shared policies, make this available to the community. Because we believe that building up this community around the security content is just helpful for the community itself, right?
Of course.
We want to help people to be secure, and that means like the content needs to be available. It needs to be easy to share those content. And it starts on the queries, the checks, the policies, but then also goes down to more integrations. Even if you're not a Go coder, like feel free to just suggest like features. It's always helpful to see that. So I think that's always like what we can ask for. Like really try use it, give us feedback. We are really nice humans, so you can go to our GitHub discussions, like start a discussion if you're unsure, and we are definitely looking forward to this.
Yeah, you being good humans definitely is something that we can attest, I guess.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I mean, it's super exciting to with you too.
Well, great, Chris. It was really a pleasure to have you on the show, and I know I learned a lot, so hopefully everyone else listening did as well, and we'll love to have you back one day.
Thank you, Bhavan. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you so much.
It was super exciting.
All right, Bhavan. Well, I think that conversation was great. I think I feel like I say that every time with our guests. I probably do, but especially in security space, I always feel like I'm learning a lot, and Christoph was just probably full of even more information that we could spend hours and hours more with him. But you know, if you had any takeaways from that conversation, what would you take away from it?
Yeah, like I really liked the succinct way in which he described the Kubernetes security posture management, like the bite size, right? Like make sure you don't have any configuration, like misconfigurations, and then make sure you are keeping all your components patched. That's an awesome description. Like if you just want to a quick reminder of what security posture management is, this makes sense. But in addition to that, right? Trying to understand what some of these terms mean. Like I know in the ecosystem, right? If you're not working with security on a day-to-day basis, some of these terms can feel a lot overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like things like SBOMs. I know SBOM has been around for like 15 months at this point, but keeping up with SBOM and how the standard is evolving, what is SBOM attestation? What's the WEX standard? How does image signing work? All of these things are getting pretty important, right? Like it's not enough to just have a list of all your different application components in an SBOM. It's actually like, if for me to trust that the application that you are giving me is secure, I want you to make sure like that you sign it or you attest to it. So that's a good standard and the way it's evolving. And then just for this episode, right? Like when I was doing some research, I came across the Salsa framework and like, okay, what is it? Like it has a cool name, but then how is it helping organizations? So I know Chris broke it down into what it does for organizations, but there are different levels, right? Level 0 means you're not doing anything, but then there are levels 1 through 4 and it basically gives you a standard baseline. So I know Chris mentioned that healthcare companies or finance companies don't have to be at the same security level as startups, or startups don't have to be at the same level. But having these different levels gives the community, gives the gives different organizations a level to standardize to. Like, okay, I'm SALSA standard level 2 certified or things like that. So having these in place and then having somebody like Chris actually interpret them for us was really helpful for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, it made me want to go get some pico de gallo and make my mouth water. But technology wise, yeah, absolutely, was very enlightening. And I like the fact that, you know, Chris said he doesn't love those big terms, right?
Yeah.
And it's more the way he kind of goes about working with customers is like, let's identify where you're at, and then go from there to make, you know, to improve and make it more difficult for any of the bad actors to get in there. I like that very. I like that approach of sort of practicality rather than just like, you know, CIO objective using big terms and saying we have to do this. Right. Mm-hmm. And even if that's the case, it's, well, let's fit the level for your application. For me, the takeaway that I think it most rang true was the fact that Kubernetes and these, cloud sort of accounts that we're using every day, they have the right primitives.
Chris. Yeah.
Right. We're not using them correctly. Or I shouldn't generalize to all of, but a lot of what he's seeing is misconfigurations. And so the concept around automation to, you know, take people's hands quite literally out of the pipeline and have it automated and doing it in a way that's using it correctly, right? Just because RBAC is there, IAM is there, those tools are hard to get perfectly right for your application. I mean, you know, I remember being asked and still are asked, like, what's the right IAM policy for this specific application? Well, it takes some time to figure that out.
Yep.
Right. And so I just want to, you know, as my takeaway, I think it's very important to just reevaluate what you have. What tools do you already have that maybe you're not using, or maybe you could double check, you know, how your company is kind of enabling it. Is it enabled? Right. I know Chris said that at one point, is they're turned off. Right.
So, yeah.
I think that as well. So, you know, I think all worth diving into, and there's a lot of concepts in security. So, you know, there's a ton more we could talk about here. And I wanted to call out, if anybody is working on a specific problem around security or improving your security posture or using some of these things that we talked about today, come talk to us. We'd love to have you on the show. I think security is something we as an industry have to take a lot more seriously. I think the cloud native community is seeing that, cloud community in general. Is seeing that. And so all four are doing some more interviews and content on this space. So with that, I know there's a couple things we wanted to do before we sign off today. One is we wanted to shout out to Amir Dixit. I hope I'm saying that correctly. But he sent over a really kind appreciation email and just thanking us for some of the content we did on, I think it was GitOps.
Service Mesh.
Sorry. Yeah. And he gave a really good example of, you know, how he was working in the space that he is, and a very specific sort of idea of how it's enabled him to adapt and take on MTLS and some of the things we talked about in the show. So we really appreciate getting those messages and emails, and Amir, thank you. If you want some stickers, send us your information.
Yeah.
We will send you out some Kubernetes Byte stickers. And hopefully you can enjoy those. So I think that was really the end of today. So without further ado, that brings us to the end of today's episode. I'm Ryan.
I'm Bobbin.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Byte. Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.